Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants. Price may vary.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth chat and discussion of every Premier League match week and a little bit of Champions League as well. I'm Robbie Mustow, he's Robbie Earle, and this is what we've got coming up in today's episode. Liverpool's misery continues as Everton wins at Anfield for the first time this century. Man City's dominance continues after their 1-0 win at Arsenal. Jose Mourinho's worst start through 50 matches in his managerial career. Thomas Tuchel's interesting changes and comments in Chelsea's draw with Southampton, and debate who truly is the second best team in England, Man United or Leicester. That's what I've got coming up in today's episode.
The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all on its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and A-Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric never could be. It was built with a driver in mind, just like Acura's been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience the electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because... I got the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink? This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera. Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
All right, Robbie Earle, another match day, mate. All coming thick and fast. And I guess the big one on the docket for this match day was the Merseyside derby, and a game that everybody loves in English football, really, whether you're from Liverpool or not. The Reds versus the Blues. Everton with years and years and years and years of struggles at Anfield. But it all changed, mate. It all changed.
Yeah.
Interesting game of football. Everton came out top 2-0. And the misery piles on for Jurgen Klopp. Where do you want to start, my friend? Do you want to go big picture on Liverpool, or do you want to hit up Everton first of all?
Oh, that's a very good point. Where should we start? Let's start with Everton, because I think if we start with Liverpool, it's taken away from what Everton and Ancelotti did. I think you said it was 1999, their last away win in the derby at Anfield. Yep. Huge credit. Huge, what's the word? Admiration for Carlo Ancelotti, Robbie Mustow, for me. This guy isn't afraid to do what's required to win a game in terms of his setup, in terms of his defensive play, in terms of sometimes it not being the prettiest. If he has to play over pressure, he plays over pressure. If his defenders have to head kick and fight, they head kick and fight. He had a flexible system with Coleman as an auxiliary right-sided player, five when they needed, four into midfield when required. Thought through, great tactic. James Rodriguez and Richarlison as the two come together for the first goal. Dominic Calvert-Lewin comes on in the second half, makes the second goal. Excellent day for Carlo Ancelotti, who is showing flexibility to being a very good, a very great manager. Not good, a very great manager. Flexibility as well, Rob.
Yeah, I think I really agree, Rob. And I think the best point you made is right at the beginning, where he's not afraid, by the way, to not park it up, because that's not the correct term. But if he's got to be defensive, as you said, it doesn't bother him. He's not one of those managers, Rob, with this big reputation and tons of great experience and success all over Europe, that he wants to outplay everybody else. He realized the situation right now. He picked a team based on that. You know, we all thought that Alan was going to play and Dominic Calvert-Lewin. I mean, I watched his press conference and he said, listen, when these guys, I said these are available, they're available to start. Comes to it, he doesn't start them. Before the game, I look at the team sheet and I'm like, oh, now I really think the Liverpool will win the game, Rob. That's honestly what I thought after looking at the team sheet. But you're absolutely right. And Seamus Coleman's position, looking after Robertson, same on the other side, but Luka Dinya looking after Trent Alexander-Arnold. Just a really sensible, smart game plan. Nothing too complicated. The boys in midfield work very, very hard. And I would say, and I don't say this word very often, a spectacular defensive display. Spectacular. Yeah. Like, and you know what? Let's cut to it straight away, Rob, because I think we're both thinking of the same kind of deal here for the underappreciated. This was a big game. This was a big result. And those centre-backs and that goalkeeper were amazing. And my underappreciated performance of the weekend, and maybe an underappreciated player, Jordan Pickford. And by the way, you know, we've criticised him before. And rightly so. He's had games where he's looked shaky. He's made some mistakes. We know he's a flamboyant goalkeeper. You know, he's... Not that he wants to make it all about him, but he's just a flamboyant type.
He's a camera goalkeeper, and he does saves for the camera sometimes.
Yeah, but I thought some of the saves he made and the Jordan Henderson save, where, you know, I was in the studio with Tim Howard, and Tim Howard's like, wow, that is an amazing save. The speed that he got across and just got his fingertips to the ball, take it around the post. Other important saves later to Mo Salah when he went through. I just thought, you know, I've got to be honest. I don't know whether he should be England's number one, but in this game, he shouldn't be underappreciated, because that was a top performance of a player that's under pressure, Rob, given what he did to Virgil van Dijk in the reverse fixture back in October, whatever it was, that totally derailed Liverpool's season. So big performance from Jordan Pickford in a situation where the pressure was on him. He had to make some big saves, and he did. So I'm giving this weekend's award to Jordan Pickford.
Yeah, it's a good shout, his performance. And you say the spotlight was on him after the challenge on Van Dijk, and, you know, some people saying it, whether there'd be retribution and all those things, which was probably taking it a little bit far. But yeah, the spotlight was on him, and Jordan Pickford came through. So I think it's the first since we've been doing the Two Robbies podcast, because my underappreciated performance of the week comes from another Everton player, who wasn't part of the back three, who were outstanding, wasn't the goalkeeper who was outstanding, was the guy who was in the hybrid right-sided, right midfield, Seamus Coleman, who's been, Robbie must say, through some real difficult times as captain of Everton, is a big part of Everton, knowing back to the times when they last won at Anfield, I think in 1999. Coleman was one of those players, Rob, I thought when Ancelotti came, thought, wonder if he's going to be part of it. Wonder if Ancelotti's going to move on from him, as he did with, you know, with other players in the team, and sort of brought them to. Leighton Baines was the one I was thinking about. But Seamus Coleman has been a magnificent captain for this football club. Performed brilliant yesterday in doing the two jobs when he had to go out to Robinson, or when he had to sit in and do a good job on Mane. He's a guy you can rely on. During Project Restart, Robin, I know this isn't necessarily to do game, he was a big part of what the players were doing, supporting the national health charities and making sure that football were doing their thing and was seen in the right life. He was a big voice in those things. And I just thought he's a guy who never really gets the limelight. James comes in, Richarlison's deep, Dominic Calvert-Lewin's going, you know, even Ben Godfrey's coming to the team, Holgate's playing well, Michael Keane. We never mentioned Seamus Coleman.
No.
I'll tell you, he's one of them. And the biggest thing I would say, and it will lead us into where Liverpool were, the look on his face and Duncan Ferguson's face when they won the game, Rob, told me everything. Told me everything what this football club, what that victory meant. And something that hit me as they were doing, as they were celebrating it. And I know, you know, Everton are always, the you know, playing catch up, the little brother in some respect. I was thinking to myself, did this game mean as much to the Liverpool players as what we saw with those Everton players at the end of the game? Did it really on this day mean as much? I don't think it did, Rob.
Well, I think, yeah, I think you're probably right. I just think the size of the accomplishment and these Everton players, Seamus Coleman, Rob, I mean, how many times must have heard about it in the derby matches where he feels, I'm sure he feels like he's let the fans down, disappointed of not winning this particular game. But I think that's a really good shout, because he's definitely the most underappreciated player on this team. Wherever you look. And you're right, he did a really good, steady job, solid job on that side. But it's a really good shout. And just bigger picture on Everton, Rob, you know, they've got players to come back. We know Alan's going to come back. Dominic Calvert-Lewin obviously came in and made an impact with the penalty, which I want to get your take on that as well. Yeah. But well done, Carlo Ancelotti. The Everton fans, and of course we know a few of them, really enjoying it. And obviously it was a good time to play Liverpool. But what a good game plan. What a determined team performance. And it was nice to see genuine happy faces at the end to win a colossal game. Mm. Let's just, as we transition to Liverpool, Rob, the penalty that was awarded later. And I know maybe, you know, it was maybe not as important to the result. I mean, this made it 2-0. So Citizen stuck it away. It's just like, of course, we do so many shows, Rob, and we do so many games and we analyze so many instances. This one, I found it, I mean, I think almost like, honestly, the hardest thing that we do in that studio is to get the angles and the looks and the trying to, you know, wow. So Trent Alexander slides in.
Yeah.
And then Dominic Calvert-Lewin kind of strikes the back of his head, and Dominic Calvert-Lewin, is he sort of going over him? And then I thought Trent is sensing that he's probably going to knock that ball into the back of the net and raised his right leg. Now, whether he touched him or not, it's really hard to see. And that's the hardest thing for us, sometimes the angles. Of course, the penalty was given. And let me just say, if we all agree it was a foul, which is obviously debatable, the Pedro Mal, Rob, which we have the ability to speak to them or to message them in game. And they basically admitted, you know what, it should have been red carded there, because that's stopping the denying, you know, because they realised it was a foul. Now, and obviously the referee gave the penalty, Rob, and I would straight away say, well, there's not a clear and obvious error there, which is the first thing really as analysts we should look at it. Is there a clear and obvious error? No. But what we end up doing is kind of re-refereeing. Well, actually, was it a penalty or was it not? I'm going just on it was, but I tell you what, I hear an argument when people message me on social media and say, well, really? Was it? Didn't he just get run into by Calvert-Lewin?
Yeah, I hear that argument, Rob, and I'm the same. And I heard the position where people said, well, actually, Trent Alexander-Arnold's in front of Calvert-Lewin, so that makes it different. It wasn't like a type of man. But I'll go back, Rob, and I think what we want is consistency. What we want is trying to understand what the referee is. I think Trent Alexander-Arnold knows that he's trying to stop Calvert-Lewin getting to that ball. So I think it's a foul if there's a contact in the head. Even accidental, because we go back to David Luiz that clipped the back of his heel. Doesn't matter if it's accidental. The lifting of the right leg is a reaction to try and catch him, because he sees the ball, he sees it away, and he sees Calvert-Lewin. And so I think less of the argument for Liverpool should be about the pen. More of the argument should be, by the way, Liverpool might have got away with one here, because Trent Alexander-Arnold should have seen a red. Should have seen a red. And in a time when you've got no central defenders, you could also be losing your right back for a little while. So for me, I kind of went, you know what? I hear the arguments and I hear people, but you know what? Trent Alexander-Arnold, if he's not there, if he's not in his way, if he jumps over him and doesn't lift his foot, Calvert-Lewin scores.
And also, Robert, it's really important to say in the laws of the game, a foul is a trip. Or an attempt to trip.
You don't have to make contact.
No. So with the raising of the right leg, it could tick the box off. That's an attempt to trip, even though maybe it didn't, which will again back up the argument that that was the right call. And again, the Pedro Mal thought it was the right call. It's just they admitted that it should have been a red card,
I'm just a bit worried with the PGMOL and VAR. Like last week, they didn't look at an offside before the Maguire foul. This week, it's like, oh, we should have looked... Come on, get it right. Come on, get the protocol right. So we all know where we're at. So we're all saying the same things.
I mean, I can only imagine, Rob, that the flood of the fear, the pressure that comes on when something happens. Because the first thing that I'm looking at in the studio
Is it a penalty? Yeah. What? Is it a red card? VAR surely got to be thinking the same two things. Is it a red card? But it didn't, apparently. It didn't register enough that they got to that. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Anyway, mate, that was that. I mean, it didn't.
No, it didn't change the game. It didn't change the outcome of the game. And you're right. Liverpool Football Club, Robbie Musto.
Yeah.
Liverpool Football Club. Where are we with Liverpool Football Club right now?
Well, I'll tell you what, we're in a raging, screaming emergency at centre-back. Correct. At centre-back. I mean, everybody knows that and knew that, but it got worse. It got worse because Jordan Henderson got injured and Ozan Kabak continues to for me, when I look at him and I look at him real close in games at the moment, that he's, I'll tell you what, I'll try and like, he's a focus. We indicate on the goal, Rob. He studies the ball. He's a ball watcher.
Yeah.
So he's got himself ready to defend, but he's looking at the ball. And Richarlison he struggles with awareness of who's around him and those runs in behind. Now, it wasn't just that one. There was a ball that went over his head.
Yeah, he's got just, done later
in the He's a bit shaky. Yeah. Listen, he's 20 years of age. It's not even his fault. He's been asked to play in a team that's got incredible pressure, that's not really got great protection from midfield. It's a team that hasn't really group defended in a deep way for a few seasons now. They kind of do it as a high press and they dominate games so much. All of a sudden, he's in a back four that looks shaky and he looks shaky. Now, you marry that with Henderson getting injured. It was Nat Phillips that came on as a young player. Ben Davis, the boy from Preston North End, has got to start playing. He's got to start playing. If he's fit and available, he's got to play. Because Kabak worries me. Yeah, absolutely ahead of Kabak.
So the Kabak thing's really interesting. Let's go down that road a little bit because I tried to do a little bit of it. So he started, Rob, now with the game, I say, 63 league games in his career. So he's a kid.
Yeah.
He heads the first ball yesterday. It doesn't go very far, maybe because of wind and might not. Yeah. Got a high distance, whatever. As the ball's coming back and he gets a terrible decision, I thought you made a really good graphic of it where he gets transfixed by the ball and isn't aware of anything. Now, what I'm thinking there, and again, I'm not giving him an out because he's been bought and he's on loan, but he's a 20-year-old kid. If there's a centre-back next to him who goes, shoulders, be alive, who's got him going, Rob, he doesn't get set. What Kabak does, he sets his 2 feet square to the ball and looks at the ball. So the moment that somebody runs on his shoulder, he's already got to go 180 to turn, and then he's got to get his speed. And he doesn't look the quickest over the ground. Whereas if he's got a natural born defender next to him, and I would like, I think, Van Dijk to talk, but a talker, but a Connor Cody, who's at Wolves, who we hear talking all through the game, keep on your toes, watch your shoulder, you know, you get back in. I just think, I don't think that's happening because you've got Jordan Henderson, who's a centre midfield player playing at centre back, doing his best. You've got no stability around the back four. You've got a back line and a goalkeeper that haven't played well. Trent Alexander-Arnold's not particularly that type either. I feel a little bit sorry for the kid, Rob, in this situation that he's been thrown in.
Yeah.
But weekend off, we always have our little time. So I'm sitting there and I'm watching and I'm seeing the game play out and I'm thinking, okay. Jurgen Klopp, you know what I think of him and what he's done to his football club and what he's bought. I've got two big questions, Rob, for Jurgen Klopp. You're defending at the moment. You've got none of your first three centre-backs. You've had two central midfield players who've played in there both injured. You've now got Kabak and Nat Phillips, your 18th centre-back partnership, two young kids who don't know the game themselves yet. Are playing in a title-winning team. Why are you playing so high? Why are you playing so high with a midfield that's not got its natural press, with a team that's not functioning well? Can we drop off 10 yards?
Yeah,
let me just finish. You've got to get these players through what you're doing. Kabak's having a time already. And we'll read social media and we'll read the media and be already like, oh, God, runs in behind me. How about if we drop 5 to 10 yards? 5 yards. And don't be so tight to the ball because I haven't got Van Dijk. I haven't got Gomez. I haven't got Matip. I haven't got Fabinho. And I haven't even got Jordan Henderson. Why am I playing so high without a midfielder pressing? It's happened a couple of times against Leicester. The goal that the Vardy scores is one of them. Kabak gets done early on. We see it today. We see it at the weekend. Give him a chance.
Right. Okay, Rob. So I'll tell you how I see this, right? And it's a footballing thing. So for me, the reason why they're so high is because of the team in general. Liverpool, with their possession, when you play against possession, Rob, whereas with technical players, Thiago and Curtis and the way that they play, the team naturally pushes into that. So what the back line, Rob, how can it... It's going to support its players, and they're attacking. They're in the opponent's half, playing all the football. Yeah. You ain't gonna go back and say, "Well, you play up there." There's got to be connect.
I'm not saying that when we're in possession, as we lose possession,
right?
In possession, we've got to be up and compact. As soon as we lose possession, this team still play high, like they've got their best back four in place. I'm saying as soon as we lose possession, we've lost the press in midfield. Curtis Jones is not a natural presser, but will work hard to win the ball out. Wijnaldum, Thiago is not a presser at all. We've lost the intensity from our game, yet we're still playing the same distance that we were when we were on top of the game when we were winning titles. On that occasion, I'd like to say, you know what, Quebec? Let's not make it a race. Drop off. Yeah. Let Richarlison have it in front of you. Let Vardy
which might start happening though. That's it.
Give him a little bit of a break to defend behind people rather than chasing people. Yeah. Okay, my second Jurgen Klopp, and I'm sorry I've got to go here, Jurgen, but right now Liverpool 4-3-3, regardless of personnel, way they're going, see it every week. Not playing well, not playing with intensity, you know what's coming. Apart from Mo Salah, who looks like he can nick a goal still, who doesn't have to be playing well. Not many things are functioning well. Let's have a look at the system, Jurgen. Let's have a look at the system. Let's have a look at saying, can we do this different? Can I test you differently? Can I set something up that, like Angelotti says, Alan will be playing and DC will be playing? I don't tell you anything about, and then all of a sudden we come 4-2-3-1 and we're different. And it might spark something different. And it might create different relationships on a pitch.
So I'm thinking the same thing, Rob, but maybe in a different, coming from a different place. They look so vulnerable defensively. Yeah, I think they've got to play three centre-backs.
I know, but I was thinking that, but I think they haven't got one centre-back.
So if you've got two...
I'm thinking
you've got
the two, same. Two great wing-backs.
Two poor ones. If you've got two poor centre-backs, just put another one in. Three poor is going to be better than two poor. I mean...
Three poor midfield players, or three poor kids.
Three poor centre backs. I mean, I know, but I think it's time is where we can't keep conceding. I conceded nine goals in the last three, Rob, and it's just like we look at the team. They've got some brilliant forward players. You could lose a Curtis Jones and play Wijnaldum next to Thiago in the midfield. You have a back three. You have your wing backs and Trent Alexander-Arnold. You can still have your front three players.
Who you pull back three then? Right now, Kabak, Nat Phillips, Ben Davis. I got a cough at the moment.
Well,
that's a championship back.
And that's why I'm saying that it's screaming emergency in their centre-back position. It really is, Rob. And listen, we shouldn't. Let's just. I just want to get a little take on the attacking players, Rob, before we move on. We spend a lot of time on this game. Yeah. Is everything connected? I'm thinking everything's connected. The front three haven't turned into three bad players, Rob.
No.
Roberto Firmino is. He's more on the quiet games now than the special games, which is a bit concerning. I still think Mane and then they have turned into bad players. They've lost a little bit of spark. It's definitely the whole thing now. Teams dropping off, Rob, letting them have it. They're very narrow. You know, I think that we'll get on to talk about City, but the difference from Man City to everybody else is that they make the pitch long.
That was another thing. You just sparked something. Jota, by the way, has been a bigger miss as any centre-back. Because he's not just that variety of up front, playing in those positions. Just had a thought, Robert, when you were saying that. I was thinking about three at the back, because we're always trying to think, could you try, and I'm not sure to say it necessarily works, but could you try Mane on the right side and Salah on the left side? Just to open the game up a little bit with the football. So Salah's going, I know he's naturally not going to come inside on his left foot, which is score. But by running on the outside, he keeps a fullback more or less and opens the pitch up. And Mane can go on the outside rather than coming in. I just wondered
The only thing about Rob is spreading them, right? I know, and I know, and City do it amazingly well. Yeah. But if you've got, I just feel like, where's the goal coming from?
Yeah, I've got the midfield runners
to score a goal. Yeah, but if you play three at the back with two wing backs, the width, right, and spreading that back four comes from the wall back, the wing backs. And you allow the guys, Mane and Salah, to do their main thing of getting inside and getting the goals. But you're creating some more space by those wing backs. So another reason maybe to have those wing backs.
Could Andy Robertson be the third centre-back, like Tierney does for Arsenal? And Creswell does for West Ham United?
Azpilicueta does for Chelsea.
Drop him in as a third and play somebody out there.
Who's your left wing-back then?
Shaq.
Oh, blimey. I mean, Tsimikas, the new kid, he was on the bench.
Greek,
I think it's the Greek left full-back that's coming to cover. Andy Robertson's fit again now. Williams could he come in and do a job in a right sided centre back?
Curtis Jones got good energy.
Right. Yeah, I tell you, one last thing, Rob. I don't want to not mention is it's the first time, and I just get your take on this. Jurgen Klopp's interview, Robbie Earl.
Yeah,
I wrote down because I thought, oh, he was happy with lots of creative moments. He thought they played some super football.
Yeah,
I just thought, oh. That sounds, I mean, I didn't see a lot of super football. I didn't see a lot of creative moments. That was the big part they struggled with. Very narrow, didn't go anywhere. We do the highlights, of course, Rob. The Henderson shot was close, good save. Salah going through. We had the Mane header, the first header. The second header is too high. The first header is a reasonable chance. I didn't see him creating that much. So I was a little surprised. I know he's trying to spin it a little bit, Rob, and not make it as bad as what maybe he feels that it is at the moment. But I just thought, well, don't start trying to pull the wool over people's eyes a little bit. You weren't very creative, and it's something as well as the centre-back situation that needs to be improved. This is obviously the hardest part of his job now and his time at Liverpool, for Jurgen Klopp, to rethink the 11 that we've just had a little rethink, and how can he get the more out of his attacking players, more width, but a bit more security in that centre-back position. And that will be very interesting over the next kind of weeks, to whether he's going to change it or just keep going on with a 4-3-3.
I tend to think, Rob, and it was interesting because I picked up about them playing and controlling games, and you know, so many things were good. I just think he's also a very good barometer of what that dressing room's like. And I think he's probably feeling right now, this isn't the time to be critical of this dressing room. This team needs a lift. There's got a lot of people kind of being negative about it, and maybe I don't need to be that guy as well. So I just get the sense that that's Jurgen being Jurgen and rallying and talking about just, things.
Yeah.
Keeping things going, but there's definitely some thinking to do, some planning ahead for Jurgen Liverpool, because it is now, Robert, a real challenge to make sure they finish in the top four. That's where we've come from, Liverpool, from weeks ago, maybe that Man City game, thinking, are they still in the title?
And we got some odds. We got some fresh odds, Rob, from PointsBet Sportsbook. We'll give them a little later.
Top four spots. Yeah. But let's move it on, mate, to the next game. That was Arsenal, Manchester City from the Emirates. Man City in the form they're in, always going to be a difficult one. Some suggest Mikel Arteta knows the magic sauce of Pep. Maybe he could find a way. But, well, after 75 seconds, they were 1-0 down, and that proved to be enough against the City team. Again, Rob, I didn't think we were at their imperious best, but again, control the game, wonderful way they play. The false nine just continues to cause team's problem, and it's another 3 points.
Yeah, I mean, it's I always think when the Champions League is about to get cracking for them, I think when you see performances like this, I think there is a little bit of a, okay, let's just manage the game a little bit more. You're right, they didn't probably get out of third gear. Great start. Pep would have loved the second goal, didn't really get that. I mean, the football, I think watching them right now, it's like it's so similar. Two or three changes again. I mean, brilliant changes that come into the side. Fernandinho came in for Rodri. He, as we've said, expertly rests players all over the team when he needs to. And it was just the build-up play was as the usual. The width is the usual. Mahrez right now is as sharp as anybody in the Man City squad. The Cancelo thing with City going to three at the back really was Stones going. I mean, everything's the same, Rob. There isn't a ton. I haven't got a ton of notes that's different than what we normally say, because the football is so slick and sweet at the moment that, again, Arsenal towards the end of the game, to be fair, 1-0 down, they're still in the match. And fair play, because that's not easy to do. And had a few opportunities going forward. So they had a decent performance. But, you know, City right now, it's just, I thought they were a little casual, Rob, a little sloppy after going 1-0 up. I remember Sterling going through and was just...
I
think they're winning games so easily. I think they might be guilty just taking a foot off the gas a little bit in this game. But you know, comfortable again and no real trouble defensively.
A couple of notes I just wrote, Rob. A couple of things I just wanted to chuck across. So it's almost like no striker, but still have all kind of dangers. Do you know what I mean? Which I kind of was trying to say, from a 4-3-3 base, which is basically what Liverpool have and a number of teams, and they're one of the most unorthodox teams I've ever seen in terms of how and where people turn up. There was a spell in the second half where I was watching, and there was basically for maybe 5 or 6 minutes, nobody centrally in the middle of the pitch like a centre forward. I don't think anybody's ever done that in our league before. Even the great Man United, the great Arsenal, have always had one with one dropping. It's just like, it's kind of quite weird how they play from a base. And there is almost no system for Man City.
Yeah, it's interesting, Rob, because I don't know whether you caught it on our broadcast today, but Mikel Arteta said in his pre-game interview, you know, playing without a striker is always what Pep wanted to do. So it kind of, you know, it's a little insight into maybe what he's looking. I mean, at Barcelona, of course, when he was there, he had Messi floating around, but not as obviously no striker as this. And today it was Bernardo Silva, sometimes Robert Zafan, it was sometimes Kevin De Bruyne. And there was one incident where I had to sort of like, you know, I sort of jumped. I was like, wow, Edison pinged out this ball, Rob, 60, 70 yards, right? To Man City's right back, Cancelo, is in the false nine position. I mean, it's just like, it's made the right back, Cancelo. He plays right back without the ball, but they don't have, they're usually with the ball. He plays centre midfield and he goes forward. He was in the false nine position from a goal kick from Edison. I mean, that's messed up. That's your right back. But it's when you're playing the ball football, when you're passing the ball well, Rob, and this is safe and secure, it doesn't matter, does it?
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter if your centre-back's on right wing. If you keep the ball, the other team can't do anything about it. And their football's so good, they're not leaving themselves vulnerable with turnovers in the transition game.
As I was watching, and I think, I'm not sure this was a Midlands term or football term. I think we all had it as kids. And when you were back as kids playing up in the back garden or out in the local fields, and you used to have rush goalkeeper. Was the guy who could play, but he wasn't being a goalkeeper.
We call it fly goalies.
Yeah, so we call it rush goalkeepers. So same thing. So one player who could use his hands, but it was basically an outfield player. And it's almost, that's what Man City have got. I was looking, same thing with Edison. I'm looking and saying, he's basically another footballer on the pitch for a minute. He's like a 12th player, really. He's not just a goalkeeper. They play through him. Like, I mean, it's just new things that have been brought in, new ways of playing. And it's interesting because Mikel Arteta's team in the end, I thought, got to grips as best as you can with Man City. Started to, you know, have one or two chances themselves. It was interesting before the game, Rob, that Pep said that he thinks Arsenal are on the right track and they'll be heading towards titles soon. I mean, I look at the table. We're 10th in the league, 34 points now, 11 behind West Ham in fourth. Still a lot of work to do at this football club.
Listen, you can look at that table and it looks shocking, doesn't it? I mean, you know, and we've been positive and we know it's a transitional period. I know it's rebuilding, but it's still shocking to see Arsenal where they are on the league table right now. It really is. And this is a difficult game. And maybe it's not the right time to question everything about Arsenal right now. But I'm just saying, you look at the league table and the points, like, wow, what has happened? But it was always going to be a difficult job. Wow. Nicola Pepe, Rob, and just looking, think of the Arsenal performance. I mean, for the most part, my first line on them, and I haven't got many notes on Arsenal, was chasing shadows. I mean, it was just difficult to get close to Man City. They managed a few attacks. I mean, I guess they were still in the game. Pep Guardiola afterwards, Rob, was very complimentary about Arsenal. He said, you know, manager's done some things there, made it difficult for us. And, you know, they were still in the game right to the end, which I suppose they were. But it didn't really feel like that. It was just a tough day for Arsenal, Rob, against this side at the moment. Man City make that pitch so big, better than any other team in the Premier League right now. and they're so grooved in what Pep's vision of football is. That's why it's difficult. And the players are at peak of their powers. They're warming up beautifully. And again, every single time I talk about City, I will talk about Diaz and Stones. They're like brothers. They're like twins. They've been high-fiving every time one makes a tackle. I mean, they are making a difference. And I think, like a goal scorer, Rob is confident and they want to score every game. These two in particular want a clean sheet every game. And that's their little challenge. And my goodness, they're doing a pretty blimmin' good job at it.
15 clean sheets so far this season already. And you're right. And I just made a little note on Diaz. Similarly, you know, I want to talk about the money that he costs. But, you know, Havertz costs a lot of money and Werner costs a lot of money. And it's no guarantee this guy comes in. And I tell you what, you know, it's like the high fives. And he's become, and I kind of wrote, the man for Man City. He's going to grow into being the company. He's a guy who I see, like, when people do things, want to give him a high five, and he gives him a little pat on the back or the little pat on the bum, that as a football league, you know, if I get a recommendation off him, I'm doing okay. He's becoming the standard bearer for what Man City do at the back. And at his age, was he 23? I think he was captain at Benfica at 18 years of age. You've seen him. He's one of them Tony Adams types or whatever. You remember we played against Tony when he was like a young kid and he was all ordering these old pros about. Looks like he's that kind of mentality.
I looked at him afterwards, Rob, and David Luiz at the end of the game, and David Luiz sort of was chatting to him and stuff. And just looking at his body language, Diaz, he's like this. He opens up he pokes his chest out. He's got his big old flipping arms on him. He obviously works out in the gym after training every day to get these big old arms. And he looks imposing figure. He's smiling. He's having himself a little bit. And I think, great. And you're right. He's going to be that guy. He's 23. So he'll ease himself into that situation. But he's going to be the leader at that club for probably many years to come.
With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Let's move it on, my friend, to a derby game in London, from the London Stadium. West Ham United 2, Tottenham Hotspur 1. David Moyes, with his first win against the Jose Mourinho team, said he really wasn't bothered about that. And you kind of think with David Moyes, it's probably right. Two teams going in the opposite direction, Robbie Musto. I think at the start of the season, we might well have thought if West Ham were in ninth spot at this point of the season, they'd be doing really well. And if Spurs were in fourth spot, it's probably where we'd hope or expect them to be. Roles reversed.
Yeah, a lot to talk about, really, for me, and this one again with Jose Mourinho. West Ham United, just marvellous. And summed up, Rob, from Declan Rice's clearance from that ball that went across the centre, and it looked like an obvious goal for Spurs late in the game. To have your guy making that sliding as a midfield player that far back, I thought was outstanding. Jesse Lingard, I mean, talk about an ideal player. A situation at that football club, what he likes to do from number 10, I guess in some ways a modern number 10, where he's not so much of a playmaking number 10, he's a running behind and make forward runs and assist and score goals, was thought was brilliant. We know what we get from their team, Rob, now West Ham United. Yeah. Mikel Antonio finds a way, reaches in there, again, a cross that Spurs are struggling to deal with. It's happening almost every week.
Sorry, go ahead. Just before you go, because I know we want to get to Spurs. It's probably in a strange way is a bigger story, and it shouldn't be for West Ham, because we need to give David Moyes and his group credit. I wrote a couple of things about West Ham that are different, Rob, with what Moyes has got. This team will go through a bit of hurt. Declan Rice will bust his gut to get back. Soufal. Yeah, the cut on the head, the 7 minutes off, the comeback, the next challenge. There's a drive and a desire in this group that we've not seen in West Ham teams for a long, long time. We've seen good footballers. We've seen good football. We ain't seen this as well as, like you say, that Lingard comes in and turns. Let's remember, they sell their main striker, Haller, before the window. Don't bring anybody in, by the way. Don't spend that money because he doesn't want to waste it. And go on to look a better team. And this West Ham team that has got the ability that it's got, but the drive and that kind of will that I said David Moyes used to instill at an Everton team that you knew, it's now being instilled in a West Ham team. That West Ham with that team, every week I was working on the weekend, I'd think, what am I going to get from West Ham? Great. Some days will be great, some days will be terrible. And we're getting a consistency. And that's the biggest thing I can say for David Moyes and West Ham is now, you know what you're in for when you play against a West Ham United team.
And wouldn't Jose Mourinho love that West Ham team and would love their spirit and love their defensive side of things and how they defend as a back four and as a midfield and those fullbacks and Souček, Rob? He'd love to work with a lot of these players at West Ham United. But he's working at Spurs and he's had time there now, Robbie Hill. And he's spent $100 million on players to make them better. And it's not working. He's not been brought in to that football club to be nowhere near the top four. He's brought in to push this team and this club further than Pochettino could. Of course, the trophy's a big part of it, but mid-table and winning a League Cup won't be good enough for those Spurs fans.
Well, I read something this week, Rob, so it was interesting that, you know, there was a few rumbles about Spurs and where they are, and I read a report that Daniel Levy is saying Jose's position will be reviewed at the end of the season. So we'll have had a League Cup and we will have had a Europa League final. Let's just remember that that's still available. So on the basis that one or the other or both, I think Jose still is fine. On the basis that no League Cup against Man City, difficult, but Jose Mourinho's done that before, stunk the place out and won 1-0 or 2-0 on the counter. Europa League with some difficult, dangerous teams in there. But Jose's done that before, stunk the place out, won a Europa League title.
Yeah.
It's not to say that he can't do it with this Spurs team, Rob, because there's enough talent in this Spurs team. But on the basis he doesn't win any of those trophies, and we're talking about a 8th, 9th, 10th finish, that looks like difficult times, difficult waters.
So, follow on, do you think, or would you, if he doesn't win a trophy, and they finish outside the top six, is that enough for you? And do you think the ownership will do that? Or does he get another window and more time?
He gets another window. Because of his history.
Said that Daniel Levy's going to look at it.
I think I'm not sure who he goes in. I mean, Jose was the guy to come in to take the next step, to bring those things. So the basis that that hasn't worked, you've now got to go and get a guy who you're going to say is going to play a different style, is going to work a different way. That's going to be another 18-month process. I don't know if Daniel Levy would just say, let me give Jose another 6 months, see if he can sort of turn it around. I think he'd get till Christmas again.
So even without a trophy?
I think his back catalogue of work might just doing him another 6 months. I would say it's done. I'll tell you why it's done, Rob, because today I wanted to make a note. Today it was Dier, Sanchez, Tanganga and Reguilon.
Yeah.
Doherty maybe comes in there. Does Alderweireld play instead of Dier? Does Rodon come in? I mean, that's not a Jose back four he relies on. It's not a Jose back four he relies on. And Ndombele is improved immensely, but has to play in a team that he can drive forward and make things happen and get on the ball. You've seen 50% in Ndombele. Højbjerg obviously has been a great signing. Bale comes on and looks a bit lively, but we don't know how that relationship's growing. I mean, there's enough there that you just, I don't know. I look at that group and think, if Brendan Rodgers had that group, they'd be top four.
Rob, I looked at the last 15 minutes of this game, right? The last 15 minutes of this game, I'm seeing Gareth Bale making great balls in, making lovely passes through to the forwards, getting in on goal. Yeah. I'm seeing Dele Alli get forward. I'm seeing Heung-Min Son come inside. I'm seeing Harry Kane get lively. Get those players in the side. Get Bale. It's better with Bale. It's better with Bale. And maybe, you know what? Maybe if he doesn't last the whole game and he gets tired, bring him off. Enough. Enough now. Get the players at your club that have got talent, Rob. I tell you what, it excites. I wrote down at the first half that there's no joy in Tottenham. There's no joy in them. There's no joy. You watch them play football in the first 45 minutes, Rob. There's no joy in their football. They're struggling.
There's no joy.
It's miserable.
There's no joy watching, and there's no joy playing. No. You look at the players there. They can't
That's
be enjoying that.
They're not enjoying it, but the last 15, 20 minutes, I'm saying, oh, here we go. This looks better. This looks... You know, lively with Bale and with Dele. Get him in. Get him
in
now.
And it was interesting. So he was asked after
his way's not working, is it?
After his game, he was asked about the philosophy and his style. And he said, second to none, his coaching methods and his coaching staff. They're not a club in crisis. What was it, 3 wins in the last 13? And, he's doing things the right way. Jose Mourinho is never going to go completely the opposite way, is he? So what you're suggesting is somebody else is going to have to do that. Jose Mourinho's not going to go away from what he does, Rob. I mean, we know Jose. He's been in our game for the last 15 years, Rob, whether it's here or in Spain or in Italy. And he's won his trophy, all doing it his way.
Is he extra stubborn now, though, with Bale and with Dele Alli? And are you trying to tell me that there's better technical, there's better players in that 11 than those two? And listen, I just want to see Bale. I want to see him, Robert. And what we saw the first few months of the season, I'm thinking, wow, he looks off the pace. And okay, I understand it. But come on, he looked okay in the Europa League game. There was a couple of moments he slapped a ball in through. He's just got a classy look about him, Rob. Yeah, and even I think there's more of him than Eric Lamella and Dele. It just looks more like a good side.
But when's Jose ever listened to media attention? When's Jose ever done the public thing? That's a problem. And sometimes the more you push it, the more stubborn he'll be. And well, we're getting to that sort of semi-toxic stage that comes in football clubs that seems to follow Jose around.
Yeah, well, he's ninth in the league table, Robbie Earl.
It's going to be interesting from here on in. League, does he almost give the league up and concentrate on Europa League? League Cup coming up, does he nick that, and then that gives him all of a sudden it's another trophy, and then that buys him time for next year? We know how Jose works, Rob. We know how the mind works.
And of course, we respect what he's done, Rob. And in the past, he's got one of those. I'm just saying, there's a graphic on the show today, Rob, about his results over. And as long as it's gone in his career, he's getting less and less with his first 50 games at his new club. Yeah. If he doesn't win the League Cup, if he doesn't win the Europa League and crashes out, and why shouldn't he, based on the defensive team, then, ninth, no trophy. Wow, that's not good, given he's had a full season, everything. You know, that's
that doesn't fill into the rundown. I think it's 81 points, isn't it, from 50 league games. Right. He's the lowest he's ever had. So maybe his ways, as we've said, you know, all that defending and not having the ball and controlling the game without possession is maybe a tactic of yesteryear, but Jose will see if he can revive it. Let's move on to Southampton-Chelsea. Interesting game. A couple of interesting incidents. And I know you had a slightly strong views on Thomas Tuchel and his situation with certainly Hudson-Odoi coming onto the pitch and then obviously subbing him off. Where are we with the Tuchel kind of experiment?
Well, first of all, just remind everybody, right, it was 1-1. 1-1 game. Minamino. And Minamino and Mason Mount again for Chelsea. So finished 1-1. Disappointing for Chelsea. You expect them to go and win this game. I was a little surprised with the lineup, and it actually involves a player that's the centre of the bit of the controversy afterwards. Callum Hudson-Odoi, for me, is much better at wing back, where he can go past players and it allows somebody else to play in the front three. He came onto the field later on, Hudson-Odoi, in an attacking area high up. In the front three, and Reece James played right wing back. I'd rather have Hudson-Odoi as a wing back. That frees up another spot for somebody else in that front three. But anyway, we've seen the same structure from Thomas Tuchel. Now, of course, it wasn't a great performance from them. I think I'm so fascinated, Rob, because we've seen this with other managers in the Premier League. Now, like, and he said it afterwards, the first 80 metres was good from Chelsea. It's the last 20 metres, Rob, is that, and that's what the Premier League's all about. Louis van Gaal found this at Man United. He wants to control things with his football, right? And he does it. And then it's like, wow, in England, they get behind the ball. It's tough to break them down. That's what he struggled with. Mauricio Sarri at Chelsea, same thing. Good football, tippy-tappy. Now, he's doing the same thing, and they're arriving at the last 20 metres or the last 30 yards, and that's the difficult part. Now, Thomas Tuchel, I'm assuming, maybe the Chelsea fans will hope that he's going to figure that out. It's like, actually, that's not the hard part. It's possessing and working the ball down the field into the final third. That's when it becomes difficult. Because in England, and I've worked on the Italian league for many years, the Spanish league, it's not the same. It's not so difficult. It's not so park the bus type of deal going on. In England, it is. And it's hard to break them down. And that's what he's got to figure out, Rob. That's the next part of the Thomas Tuchel thing now is defensively secure. Yeah, kind of tick that box. Got caught out with a really good ball from Redmond. So generally strong defensively. And that's okay, but you might have to tweak the dial a little bit, turn the attacking dial up to find a way to get past those packed in defences.
And it looks like he's going that one central with the two guys either side, whether, you know, he's got to try and get Werner or Havertz. He's put, as you say, he's playing Hudson-Odoi a couple of times. I've seen him play in there. Might have been one of the cup games or something, but he's certainly brought him central, so he gets Reece James in the team. And it's interesting because a couple of things that Thomas Tuchel said after the game was, you know, he's not just here to get Timo Werner scoring goals. He's got a bigger brief than that, which I thought was quite an interesting thing, that it's not just about, like, you know, one player and he's become his personal trainer and he's got to get it going. He's got lots of other things he's dealing with and looking to sort out. But the Hudson-Odoi thing was particularly interesting in the bringing him on. Didn't like his body language, didn't like his attitude, apparently, and so takes him off. And I had absolutely no problem with him doing that, to the point where I almost quite liked it. And as a fellow pro, I know what that means, and it's a bigger slap as you can get as a professional when that happens. But by the way, if I don't like his attitude, if Hudson-Odoi, who's been out of the door, out of the picture for pretty much most of Frank's reign, gets a good look in when this guy comes in, fresh start, plays you a lot, gives you a bit of credit, I see plenty of pats on the back. Then you come on and have that half kind of, I'm not sure if it's my day, I'm not sure if I'm into it. By the way, drag your backside off, sit in the stand, and I'll tell you what, you won't play for the next game. And if you want to go, and that's probably the reason why Hudson-Odoi is not a consistent player in the Chelsea team, because we've said before, haven't we, he's got ability, this kid. He can run, he's isolated, he can create things, but something's missing. There's something Frank sees in him that's not right. And maybe the new guy's come in and he's thought, right, I'll show. And then, do you know what's probably happened? He's getting back to his old ways.
Correct.
I actually liked what Tuchel did because I think when you're a new manager going into a football club, now and then shock the dressing room. Now and then send messages to the whole dressing room so everybody understands it. And I thought that's what it was yesterday. And absolutely, I liked it. And if I'm a Chelsea fan, I'd be saying, you know what? We've got a manager here.
Right. And that might be the difference, the little link of previous managers at this club where it's fallen away a little bit. And this really great squad that everybody talks about, and it is, but there's something lacking, missing. And maybe he's realised that, Rob, and said, right, I'm going to send a message. I agree with you. And by the way, not everybody's like that. And of course, Tim Howard was the other way, didn't like it. I've seen other former players and pundits have the same opinion as that. So it's kind of mixed a little bit.
Yeah, but I'm
with you. I'm with you on it. I think the charm offensive from Thomas Tuchel is over. Same with the centre forward that Tammy Abraham didn't like what he was doing, pull him off. You know, he's got options. He's got options there now. And I think, you know what, there's a little disconnect, Rob. And it's all come full circle. When we watch Thomas Tuchel in interviews, he's so thoughtful, he's so measured, and he's so respectful. And it's like, wow, what a lovely, great guy. And when you see him on the sideline, he's like this, isn't he? He's a bit more fiery. Animal.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's more anger, a little bit of fire in him than maybe people initially thought. And now he's showing his teeth a little bit here with his squad. He doesn't care who it is. You're right. He's played Hudson-Odoi more than anybody else over the last season or so. And I think he will continue to be an important player for Thomas Tuchel.
Yeah, yeah.
I personally think it's more of a wing-back because you get that attacking threat, particularly against the weaker sides, and you can still have three others up front. But no, I thought, and he's what I like about him. He's like, you know, he told everybody. There's no BS.
Yeah.
What? He didn't feel. He just said didn't like it. Yeah. Didn't like his body language. Yeah. Didn't do the pressing.
And so the other thing is, Rob, and I hear the other arguments, and I understand what players are saying, because we've been players. We know that, fortunately, it's never happened to you, but you know it has happened. I've been in dressing rooms where it has. But the point being, so what does he do, Thomas Tuchel? Doesn't like what you've seen from Hudson Doyle and possibly lose a game or see him make a mistake and then go after him, nah, that was a mistake. No, he's dealt with a problem. And I ain't got a problem with that. I think Jose Mourinho's done something similar. And we used to say, oh, Jose, you know, with the Joe Coles and the people when Joe wasn't running up and down. I think he dragged Joe off. Yeah. And that's what big managers do. You make big calls and some people might not like it. That's okay.
Oh, Rob. So, yeah, so we're on the same page there. I mean, it wasn't a great performance. And Tuchel, this was never going to be a plain sailing job. This is, you know, there's a lot of good players there. But there was a reason why Frank kept changing. Mix it around, you know, it's going to take some work. And I think he's realizing that now. I mean, the results have been great up to this point. A little bit of a step back, but I'm excited to see him. I'm excited to see this project.
Yeah, you want
him.
To watch it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You feel like you're learning something, you're seeing something, he's working out his players and, you know, he's got to still obviously compete. Interesting with the Champions League coming up for next week, Atletico Madrid, I think that's Tuesday. We'll do a podcast after that. But obviously, that's going to be a big game, isn't it, against a team who are well set up, who can play with a bit of fire as well. So, yeah, interesting days at Chelsea. Let's just move things along, mate. Let's talk about sort of the two teams chasing Manchester City, probably the best of the rest at the moment. Leicester City with a really impressive 2-1 win away at Aston Villa. Two teams who have both done well this season in the very different ways. Leicester City just seem to get goals. If Jamie Vardy doesn't, I think you talked about it before, where the other goal is going to come from.
Coming now.
Madison Barnes, are becoming the go-to guys. For Manchester United, just putting these together, looked to me like a typical United performance, maybe with Europe having played on Thursday. Not great. A couple of good moments, Rashford with one, James getting a goal and a good win. Good win in the end, more about the points than the performance.
Yeah, I mean, the first half wasn't brilliant to watch, but again, Rashford produces a moment and they're 1-0 up. I thought they improved their football in the second half. Newcastle kind of surprised me a little bit. I mean, we know that they've Graham Jones, a new coach there, and this diamond and this high press is like, wow, it was really good. But they absolutely blew a gasket in the second half. I mean, the last 20 minutes is like, wow, this is kind of old Newcastle. So it's good signs there, but whether they've got to get fitter, get used to be able to do that for a longer period of time. You know, goals going in, it just deflates them a little bit. So they are bang in trouble, of course. Newcastle United now just 3 points ahead of Fulham at the bottom of the Premier League table with a ton of games to go. They are really in trouble with Callum Wilson, their best player out for many more weeks.
Next two games next two games, Newcastle play Wolves at the weekend and then go West Bromwich Albion the following week. Fulham have Crystal Palace away next at the weekend and then go to Spurs. So an easy game for Palace, maybe against Palace, tough game against Spurs. For Newcastle, it's probably a tougher game against Wolves, not so tough against West Bromwich Albion, but could be all on down there, couldn't it, for that fight?
I think it's going to be there. I mean, Newcastle won more games, but they've lost in it, and Fulham have got a lot of points from draws. So that's going to be, I mean, we hope that's going to be a real good race now to the end of the season. There's a ton of games to go. Is it a third? Third of the games to go. But now that Fulham have got that win, you know, all of a sudden it's looking tight. And Steve Bruce again, the whole spotlight's going to be on him again. The pressure's going to be on him. But they have looked better, Rob, with this different shape, this new energy.
Yeah. You've got to do a bit of work of fitness and balance out between doing some training, getting right. At the other end, though, that race for second spot seems to be between Manchester United and Leicester as we speak. 49 points each for both these teams. Right now, Rob, who would you fancy?
I think you've got to fancy Man United, Rob. I mean, totally honestly, I think I enjoy watching Leicester a little more.
Leicester a lot more, I've got to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, United, they've had some disappointing results of late, but they've got some players that can do brilliant things. Yeah. Bruno and Marcus Rashford that can look $1 million at brilliant, but there's times where they... I think there's in the first half, Rob, and I know they got other games coming up, but it's like he's second in the league table. Like it didn't feel like it felt like somebody on social media said, God, this feels like a pre-season friendly. It's like a testimonial game. Mm-hmm. It did, didn't it? There seems to be a drive.
When you watch Manchester City on a not really brilliant day and you say they're top the table, it's phenomenal how you look at Manchester United and don't think they look like the second best team in the English football.
You're absolutely right.
Could be. Some of that I'm interested in is that mentality there with that group. Do they believe they're the second best team? Because that's what their aim should be now. They should be best of the rest. And it's interesting because I heard a couple of things just being said after the game. You have to say it's progress, Rob. They're 14 points better off at this stage than they were last season, you know, to second spot. One last in the last 19, I think, all competitions. There's been progress. There's no doubt about it. But does progress mean they're going to fight for second and all of a sudden, a bit like Liverpool, got one step, and then got back to titles? Because that's what it needs, Rob. And against Leicester, they should be saying, we're bigger and better than Leicester. When I asked the question, who's more likely? Manchester United should be more likely. It should be an easy question to answer, really.
Yeah, based on budgets and spending and it should be, but it doesn't feel that way. I mean, you're right. I mean, there's been progress there, Man United and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and you know they're going to finish second. They're going to finish in top four, second or third. You know, decent. It's just, is he going to be the guy to make that final jump and to win trophies and to start bring back some glory to Man United? That's the question mark over him, because he's never done that before as a manager or a coach to have that kind of success. And can he fill the gap, Rob? Can he make us think, wow, look at this United side. They're consistent. They're strong. They're creative. They've got another couple of players coming in the summer. That's going to be the challenge for him. And I think he's had a bit of time now, and the signings have been really good to make them better, but is he going to kick on next season to get closer to Man City or the best side? And that'll be the main thing, really, Rob. And he deserves that look, but where he can do that, I still have reservations of whether he's that man to be able to push this club to win a title.
But doesn't that also become part of recruitment? And if you go and get the Bruno types, he's got to do what Klopp did, bring in game changers, bring in the people who play in his first 11, who make them better, who close that gap, who go to the next level. That's what we don't know with Manchester United.
Yeah.
And that's the question.
Right. It's odds time, my friend, for top four. Top four odds. Are you reading them? Should I read them?
You go ahead and I'll
all right. These are our friends from PointsBet Sportsbook. Top four odds, okay? Yeah. In no particular order, though I'm going to give Man City's at the end because it's hilarious. Okay, so Man United -715. This is for top four. Now, of course, they're in a great position in the league table. That makes sense. That's really heavy odds on.
Is this top four or the three under Man City? Is this the top four?
This is top four. This is just for top four. Each club for be top four. Yeah. So Man United right now are in a great spot in the league table. -750. It's kind of, they're going to be odds on favourites.
Yeah.
Chelsea, -110. So much more dodgy.
Yeah, on the
Liverpool,
edge.
Liverpool, -139.
Ooh, on the edge.
But Leicester City -400, so they're favourites.
Yeah, so that's people really fancy them. So people are going.
People fancy that. Bigger numbers on a minus is fancy. Yeah. Liverpool did that one, didn't I? So Spurs +850.
Ooh,
so now we're into the 8.5.
Out of it, 8.
Yeah.
Ooh,
Aston Villa +1600.
1600.
Bit harsh. Mm. Arsenal. Sorry, Arsenal fans. +3,000.
Oh, dear. Sorry, Mikel.
Sorry. Everton, +850. So, similar to Spurs.
You missed out West Ham. You missed out the Hammers.
I'm going to get to them. I've got them. I've got them here.
Good.
So, West Ham United, +400. So, more favoured than Spurs.
More favoured than Spurs and Villa. Wow. David Moyes.
And if you want some definite money, you want to earn some money, Manchester City... Again, minus numbers has got to be a big number. A -100,000.
-100,000.
Something like that. Yeah. So, but of course, that's why, because they're locked into top four. Ridiculous. So there are your odds.
Man City plus three with West Ham +400. West Ham +400 might be worth a little bit. But you've got to put on $100,000 to win 100.
Or 10. I don't know what it is. Some crazy.
Win 100. Win 100.
Is it? Oh, right. Yeah. Right.
Mm. Not good. Not good bet. Either.
Not good odds.
The weekend's results. So Wolves won, Leeds nil, and Melier sort of own goal for a Wolves team that found a little bit of form back. Leeds, obviously. Yeah. A bit up and down. Burnley nil, West Brom nil, and nil nil for neither team. West Brom down to 10 men, but actually could have found a way to get all three. Fulham won, Sheffield United nil, in the big game down at the basement. It closes the gap for Fulham on Newcastle and absolutely gives them hope. Still think there's a bit of fighting to do for Scotty Parker and his team. Yeah. But that's it, mate, on a dramatic weekend. We're just around the hour mark on our podcast, which I think is the sweet spot on a weekend when Merseyside is blue, my friend, as Everton finally got a derby win at Anfield and Liverpool lost their captain and lost the big game. It's Man City that's at top of the pile. 10 points clear from Manchester United, Leicester and West Ham as the leading pack who are chasing. We'll be back on Wednesday. That's February the 24th. So we can look back on a big week of Champions League football. Chelsea got a tough one against Atletico Madrid, and Manchester City, they take their fabulous form against Borussia Mönchengladbach. But for now, I'm Earl, he's Musto. Together with the two Robbies, thanks for watching and listening. Stay safe, be healthy. It's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him.
Good night.
Doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower, just $329, during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.